Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. Welcome to another episode of the Plant Cunning Podcast. In this episode, we are joined by herbalist and educator Claudia Keel from Upper Vitae Herb School. We're going to talk all about herbal education and what it takes to support a person to become an herbalist, as well as all sorts of other interesting topics. Before we get into this episode, I want to let you all know about the Plant Cunning Conference. It's happening at our small farm in central New York, September 9th and 10th. We're being sponsored by Maple Creative, which is a web development company which helps make websites for herbalists, among other things, as well as Woodland Essence, is a fantastic herbal product line founded by Kate Gilday. Kate will be speaking at the conference, as well as Matthew Wood, Zamboni Funk, Lisa Fazio, me, AC, and lots of other amazing speakers. So I hope to see you there. You can get tickets at www.plantcunningconference.com. You can find Maple Creative at buildwithmaple.com and Woodland Essence at woodlandessence.com.
Today we are thrilled to have Claudia Keel. She's the director and founder of Arbor Vitae, which is an herbal school. We're really excited to speak with her today. So hi, Claudia. How are you doing?
I'm very good and very happy to be here.
So we have a traditional first question on the podcast, and it's, how did you come to the plant path?
Yeah, so it's great you asked that. And it's really interesting, particularly for herbalists, because at least people of my age, you know, in my mid-60s, you don't really know you can be an herbalist when you grow up. And so there's always some convoluted path. It's not a given for a lot of people in general anyway. And so mine was that as well. I suppose a little backstory could start in my 20s when I started going to school, or even in my high school. I was really involved with studies in religion and philosophy, even in high school, and continued that into college, and was thinking, you know, the way to explore myself and the world and meaning was I could be a college professor or something in that area. But by my third year, deep into a lot of philosophy and abstract things, I became just overwhelmed by the abstractness of it all. And it actually felt the opposite, not meaningful at all. And so what I did, I had actually had all my requirements in my major, so to speak. I traveled like for 4 months in between my junior and senior year, and then also just took all art classes and dance classes. And that was something that I had always done, but it just opened up this other way of exploring the world, colors and form, and a way of my relationship to the world and many things. So I, long story short, within that, it's not part of this story directly, but it leads to it, because I was an exhibiting artist. I painted murals in the city. I worked as an artist in residence, and it was good. I was happy. And so I did that in my 20s and 30s and traveled every year for a number of months of every year. So I was drawn to traveling to the wildest places I could go, and there's stories to be told. But within that, things happen. When you're in odd places, and this is not a time where you can be in contact with anybody. So I ended up going to local herbalists in different places. One was in Chiapas in the San Cristobal de las Casas. That was, I think, the most moving, because I spent the most time there. And this is in like 1981 to 82. And I went to just a local herbalist, and I was of course, the only gringa there. And everybody's just sort of sitting around, beautiful Mayan ways and being. And so we didn't speak very much, but I had a fungus growing all over my skin.
So they could just see it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yes, he definitely could see it. And so he showed me his plants in his backyard, so to speak, and showed the plants, which I didn't know what they were, of course, but I just thought it was oh my gosh, you know, I could see what was going to be my medicine. So he gave me this medicine, and it was in a Revlon bottle, which actually still tasted of Revlon is an old shampoo to be around back in the day, as they say. Mm-hmm. So it tasted of Revlon. It tasted of shampoo, but I trusted. I drank it and my fungus went away. You know, and it was not an easy thing to do because I had gone to a local clinic. And but it was also, it wasn't just that it was a cure, so to speak, for what I went that was natural, but it was also just the whole environment of it. And there were other things like that that made deep imprints into me.
Yeah.
And so there are a few more stories within that. And then I was in 95 when things really started to shift. I went back to Central America and some shaman wanted me to initiate me, and a number of other things happened. There's very dramatic things. I was in a serious bus accident, other kinds of things that were related to that. But around that, everybody was sort of seeing me in some way in some healing practice or something. And I was very happy as an artist, not thinking about being an herbalist, but I was drawn to it. I knew all through the 20s, I collected books and did things, but it's just something you read, right? And you know, I had flower essences from college, but I didn't know how to use them. So one thing led to another, and I didn't follow anybody, but I realized I had been working on an organic farm up in the Hudson Valley, and that I had a little inheritance. And I thought, oh, if I had any money, I want to spend it. I want to grow plants. I want to grow herbs. I just knew I wanted to grow herbs, which was like out of the blue. And I thought, well, I better go to a school. I better study. And so that year I just started to study in different ways. And very quickly I met a lot of really extraordinary teachers that became my teachers. And, you know, Kate Gilday is one who you've had here and will be at the conference. And Matt Woods, another. And later on, William Lesassier, and a number of people that people know there, but they were the ones that I mostly just went and had relationships with to study with. And I realized, you know, so I had still no intention to be an herbalist, but I realized this is an amazing gift to know how to use plants to help people and how to, you know, and so I started just offering things to friends, and the friends of friends started to tell people and friends of friends. So as lo and behold, I just had a practice before I even tried. And also at this point two, I was thinking, oh, I should have an office, but then I had been studying with William Lesassier, and he lived not too far from me in the East Village of New York City. And I just sort of put it because it's to that direction over there from where I am. But within that, he just practiced out of his, you know, tenement apartment. So why couldn't I? So I lived in a tenement apartment that didn't have a doorbell. So you had to call up and throw the keys out. And it was a 5-floor walk up and pretty funky, you know, because it didn't have, the bathtub was in the kitchen and the traditional old tenement. And I just thought it was great, but people came and I started to work that way. Within that, I didn't realize what a big jump it was for some people uptown to come down to me. But so
that's funny.
Yeah. And within all of that time too, you know, I've been studying a number of other things, not just started to make sense to me. So I had mentioned just now that I had circled around flower essences since 1980, but read them to go to sleep. I felt like the indications were just wisdom about the world, you know, these indications about how ways you can apply flower essences if you ever read those things. But I just would carry them around or do things, but I didn't know how to take them. But I started to study with David Dalton. I had studied with other people with flower essences as well. But when I started to study with David Dalton, he made flower essences out of all the medicinal plants. And I had gotten to know them. And it's just started to click. Like, my gosh, I know this plant. I understand its energy in this way. And then this is just expanding it more and another way of preparing plant medicine. And to me, it's very connected to herbalism. Sometimes people separate them out. And I think it's an unnatural separation. It's an unnatural history. But at any rate, that developed for me. And I also was exposed early on, like in 1990, through Dina Falcone, a few other people, with the work of Weston Price, and started to study traditional nutrition. It's expanded in many different ways, but my practice started to focus on people with wanted some kind of emotional balance in their life, with which could take many forms, and also with people with a lot of digestive disorders. But it always included many different people from different places and different ages. And actually in New York City, I found the people that I worked with the most were from other cultures, because they were more used to coming to herbalists. So for the other piece, so at any rate, that's one version of the story. Yeah.
I love all the visuals of your time in apartment and sitting with all of those amazing teachers, like just such a special experience or a series of experiences. So I did have a question come up though, when you said you weren't sure how to use flower essences, like how do you use them now?
Well, how do I personally use them, or how I use them in my practice? So first, I didn't understand how to prepare a flower essence from what you bought at the store. Like they didn't sell dropper bottles back in the day. I just didn't even know to buy them half of the time. And I mean, I did later, but that's not the least of it. It's just that I didn't have a sense of which to choose for myself, because when you open up a book or look at anything, you read these indications, you say, I want everything. I need everything.
So, yeah.
I'll try this today. I'll try that tomorrow. And, or put them all together. And, it's just, there was no wherewithal how to apply them, even though I connected with them and felt their energies. I didn't know how to use them. I mean, there are some stories, that are dramatic. I mean, but basically when I started to study more formally connected with herbalism, I connected with the energetic system of how to look at the essences and understand their patterns and understand our patterns. There's many different ways to do that. Like there are many different languages, but that opened up so much for me. And also for myself, like I realized too, let's say something important, but I had been giving myself when I had been studying, I'd studied the Bach essences, I say with Finder, a number of people that I had studied with before I actually formally started studying with David Dalton. But within that, I gave myself essences and I don't, they helped, but I finally said, I'm going to drive. I drove 5 hours to New Hampshire from New York City to have a session with David in person, because no one did anything that we can do now, like online or over the phone or this or that. So, and I remember he gave me all these essences that, like, if you opened a book and I'd say, I take this, this, and this, but maybe not this, or definitely not that. Those are the ones he chose. It's like that I had a blind spot about, related to my own sense of shame, that I couldn't be aware of that and other things. And I realized that was a core. And I thought, it is helpful to have someone else.
So helpful.
Yeah. See you. So.
Yeah, it definitely is very easy to not see your own biases and blind spots. And yeah, that's why practitioners have to visit other practitioners.
Definitely.
So it seems like herbalism grew like a kind of like a weed that you didn't notice at first. And then suddenly it was this towering tree in your life.
A beautiful weed. Yes.
Yes, the tree of life.
What do they say? No, unintentional wildness. Anyway, my garden here is very wild. And the virtue of it is that I get some really great surprises. And I love that part.
Yeah. So what are some some of the plant surprises that you're seeing, and what are some of the plants that are like present in your life right now in your garden that are kind of stand out either in your apothecary or what are some of the plants you're
So this year is a great year. I know that there's the flooding and all these that with the that comes with all the climate change and all these things, but and the smoke and the burning and but in this little corner that I'm in Columbia in the woods, the water is accepted into the land and things are flourishing. So I, you know, as an herbalist, I have a difficulty removing other plants. So, we have actually in moving into the woods, we brought some colonizing plants, you know, in there, or they were there. So we've been removing some bittersweet and some other, you know, other plants this spring. And what came up, I mean, this is not what I was going to talk about, but just since what's popped up is, is all this wild Solomon seal.
Really?
Oh, yes, wow. Solomon seal is a really wonderful plant. I did bring Solomon seal here. It took a while and it's very happy here now, but these beautiful little wild Solomon seal plants with Jack of the Pulpits.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. And
a few other plants in this one little area. And I realized, gosh, we've been here 6 years. It's been living here 6 years. And then just opened it up and they were there. But then again, there's the plants that just follow you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so they're very happy here this year. And they're starting to integrate. So the ones that just have followed me through New York and everywhere I go around the planet are, I think of nettles. So just around here, my husband asked me not to plant any nettles near the house or the barn. It's just a very simple, reasonable thing. Actually planted some way further and they weren't far that happy. And they just started growing right next to the rocks in the barn out of the rubble of building some nettles, which is not the place where nettles like to grow, even though nettles is pretty vital. And then we brought some soil in around the house and it just grew. It was in all the, evidently it was in that soil because it's all around our house. And so planting it and moving it, but I do have, and all these plants are just starting to wake up. You know, I would go on a long list, but so nettles is just this polycrest that could be used for so much, from food and for, you know, fiber, of course, but also just amazing medicine. Like we're just beginning to understand how helpful it is for the kidneys with using, you know, nettle seeds, you know, and then and the roots as well as just as a nourishing plant. So, but the other plant that's everywhere around the house and the barn that hasn't been planted as well as yarrow. So I thought I had to bring those two in today. And they're, you know, they're both kind of, that's why I said. And you know, yarrow too, it's like people do know yarrow. It's like for so many herbalists, it's like almost like an initiation, right? Because you get cut and you get a deep cut and you put yarrow on and you say, oh my gosh, herbs really work, right? You know, and it's just really a beautiful experience. I've seen it a few times, like with students, I just like, oh my gosh, this works, you know. So, but it's so much more too. I mean, because it's not only helps you clot, but it helps prevent clots. So it's a really amazing herb as you get throughout life. And through COVID, it's an amazing ally, you know, and really important both for the fever of COVID, but for the, you know, Matt Wood calls it the master of the blood. It's such a great thing to remember about yarrow because it has such an action in balancing the blood. But if, you know, you have this, you know, line of protection too that yarrow gives you. And it's so many cultures because it grows around the world, has this spiritual awareness. So if I had someone just recently asked me, so I had thought about this before, like what three plants? And I thought, well, it has to be at least nettles and yarrow. And then
The third can be like a seasonal choice.
there's a lot that want to be for third. at any rate, so those are popping up all around. And then different things are coming. Like we had teasel come here for the first time.
Oh, nice.
It's really
That's really cool. So how did Arbor Vitae start?
That's actually, I think, my favorite. I'm going to
I like that one.
Put the accent on the wrong syllable, as my father used to. Arbor Vitae, just to sort of say, it had a lot of names for our school, and we thought it has to be a plant. There's a lot of plant names already taken for schools, so we didn't want to do that. And we thought it had to be like a New York City plant, right? And so cedar, which is Arbor Vitae, you know, is a New York plant. We did also think about mugworts. I usually say that's our secret name, but
yes,
now
that's so cute. I'm
saying it right here, but we really, that was really in the midst of, you know, huge Hogwarts school fame, and so we thought we didn't want to copy them, at least.
Mugworts.
So Arbor Vitae, we chose, instead of choosing cedar, because tree of life, and that's really what herbalism is. It's like this life-giving, you know, one tree of life. Sometimes they're depicted with all the plants, all connected to one root. And that's how, you know, this whole.
So beautiful.
So we chose that name for better or worse with pronunciation, but that's just all fun.
It is a wonderful plant. I've just started some cuttings of it, and they seem to be doing all right. But we don't have it here yet, but
we will.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just around where we moved up in New Paltz, this farmhouse. It's not the right plant to plant by your foundations of your house, by the way, really tall and fast. But the house has completely surrounded with Arbor Vitae.
Really?
Yeah, and I was like, I thought, this is for us, you know, like, so we'll have
you're
to
like, we're home
another place, but it's surrounded by Arbor Vitae.
That's so special. Yes.
Very love protective.
That. Yeah. So what was the inspiration for starting the school? Like, how did it come about?
So I founded it with Richard Mendelbaum, who's still, you know, very much a part of the core of the school, but now I work at Diana. Isidoro and I are running the school, so to speak. But Rich approached me and we talked, you know, said, because both of us were approached by somebody else to start a school in Brooklyn. This is back in 2011 or 12. And we talked and we realized if we were going to do a school, we didn't need to do another intro program, that there are lots of that around. We both felt the need to have something that would help somebody actually practice if they wanted to do that. Both of us had good educations, but there was nothing supporting us in going into meeting with people. And, you know, I myself had, you know, being a woman, just saw all these amazing women studying with me and before me and knew the plants so well, but there wasn't this, they didn't feel the ability to start putting up their shingle as an herbalist. I particularly noticed it, like men who studied would just go ahead and do it more readily in some reason. I think it's a cultural thing, but I just also realized we weren't supported in doing that. So we realized we wanted to do that. And we realized it needed to be like a 3-year program to do that. And we started to put together a curriculum that we wanted, that we wished we got all together. It was, you know, that took us like 10, 15 years to do, but it's in 3. So it is intensive, though it's not, it's totally manageable, but it just puts all the pieces together. Cool. And we started in New York in 2013, the first year.
Amazing. So what in your opinion does it take for someone to be able to put out their shingle? Like what should an herbalist know how to do?
3-year program condensed.
Yeah, well, there's many pieces that go before that, but also isn't, you know, like herbalism can be, is usable at every point. Like if you know how to make a tea, like chamomile tea, you can do so much. So you can we can work and offer herbs to people out of what we know and understand readily, right? And so at every point, it's not like you have to get to this other point to practice, to hang out your shingle. Mm-hmm. But people didn't feel supported in doing that, I think. But then there's these categories, for better or worse, because there's really a spectrum, you know, like people say, oh, there's the family herbalist, there's the community herbalist, and maybe what some people call the clinical herbalist, which I have so much problems, but I have to use that word because I would just say
herbalist.
Yeah, just herbalist. I just call myself an herbalist. But people who are more focused on dealing with a wider range of ailments. So at any rate, before you do anything, like you can learn a lot about plants, just like you can learn a lot about the body and pharmaceuticals and use them. But I think one of the reasons why I loved being an herbalist when I started to meet with people, it wasn't like, as I said, it wasn't something that I sought out, but it just sort of happened. I realized, oh my gosh, if I connect with the plants and I connect with my own heart and just listen and connect with that person, like I'm in my heart, both connecting to plants and people, that's how I can be a good herbalist. I thought, that's a good way to live a life. Like with all the searching that I did in all different ways, I thought, this is the most comprehensive way, at least for my way, to sort of bring so many pieces together. So many herbalists come to this path, you know, in the school from so many different walks of life. And you always bring that in because it's all part of life. So that's the wonderful thing about being an herbalist from my perspective, of course. So I think that part is the most important place, that we love people and we love plants. You know, some people say I love plants first and then people, but we're all a part of life, you know, and there's not that distinction. And so, and it doesn't mean you have to be a social person either. Because some people don't want to meet with people because they feel more reclusive. And even though I might not seem that way, that's sort of my leaning. And because meeting with somebody, it's not about being social, it's just sitting with them.
Yeah, connecting.
And connecting and listening. And when I first started, and even now, like you start meeting with somebody, I thought, I don't know anything about this ailment at all. It's like there's a lot of things that are coming up in the world today with people.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, but, and so you start with thinking, what am I going to offer? But it's not about that. Over and over again, it's certainly helpful to understand different ailments. And that's what we study, you know, in many different ways and ways in. But what we offer is looking at the patterns that they experience as an herbalist. We look at, you know, and listen to that. And often people tell you what they need. And you just happen to know a plant that fits with that
description.
That description, you know, and even if it's not clear what's going on with somebody, because some things can be very complicated, there's always a way in with the plants. Always a start. And then that helps to unravel things. And it helps on many levels for people. Like I used to talk about the side effects of taking herbs, because I would watch, especially in the city, was very dramatic, because very urban people, not at all able to connect with plants and in any way, and sort of a disconnected life, because we just get food out and do all these kind of things. And I would just watch things change in all different ways for them. And it was just really nice. But that didn't completely answer your question. What do you need to be an herbalist, is your question?
Well, yeah, but go ahead.
Well, how does Arborvitae help support somebody to become an herbalist and be able to put out their shingle too? Like, what do you need to be supported?
Okay. Well, I'll just do a brief description of what it is and then maybe talk about, you know, how that could be in lots of different ways. But so we have a 3-year program. And actually, when we were talking about it, Rich and I. I had just been, well, a few years back in 2008 in Africa, luckily to be in Africa, to somebody who invited me, and had visited an herb school in Uganda in the forests of Uganda. It was pretty cool. It was
nice. That's so cool.
A great honor. And but they had they actually had a 3-year program. And the first year there was just learning the plants. Mm-hmm. And the second year there was learning diseases. And the third year was what they call specializing. And it could be traditional African spiritual thing, or it could be midwifery, it could be bone setting, it could be a number, very different categories than we had here and very different ways of approaching things. But I thought that was amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is amazing.
And I thought that's what we should do. So in a sense, we do a version of that. Mm-hmm. So the first year is this big year where we try to bring all the pieces of herbalism and introduce them. So we'll introduce the languages of, you know, what we call the languages, energetics, which energetics can mean many different things to different people, but it's the energies of things. So and patterns. And so in Ayurveda, they have different language for that, different culture that leads to these different things. And in traditional Chinese medicine, they have another one. Then there's this lineage from like Africa, Egypt to Greece and to Europe that has all these different permutations, and over here to the Americas mixed in with all the indigenous ways. So there's that lineage too, which for lack of a better word, because it's a broken system, is, you know, we sometimes call Western European or Western, you know, Greek medicine or... So we go into those because they have ways and patterns that do still, they're still alive, very much so. And they're connected to the plants we use. So we go into that. It's to introduce other ways of assessment using the tongue and the pulse. Like it. And of course, botany, you know, looking at the plants, meeting the plants, going out, being able to identify the plants. A lot of things look like nettles, as much as we know nettles with the sting, if you look at it. So, gosh, we go through the year, like, you know, the different seasonality of ways of using plants in the first year. We go through the seasonality of our lives, from children to elders. And a lot of introduce flower essences, introduce food as medicine, making, and of course, a big part of it is learning how to make medicine many different ways. And they get, so the idea behind it is you might not all make medicine the same way. You might not all practice all three, speak all three languages. But in our world today, it's really helpful to know them and then choose which one goes deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems to really cover the bases. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then, and of course we go through the body system. So that's, mm-hmm. So it's a lot, you know, and
yeah.
But then in the second year, we start to focus more on when things go wrong, mm-hmm. and different ailments and different things in modern life too, like the way sleep is disturbed, ways to work with that. But they also start working with people on their own and support it. Sam Perry, who's beloved core teacher, meets with every student once a month for an hour just to go over one case. So they get this direct one-on-one experience of doing that. And the third year, continuing on with what I call ailments, diseases, imbalances, disharmonies, all these things that we look at as herbalists. But we have a clinic.
Oh, yeah. What's the clinic like?
That's the sort of the reason, as I sort of intimidated as we started, as suggested, is that because this is where you see where it works. I mean, people are working in the second year too with people, you know, but a lot of times they're people that they know,
right?
Mm-hmm. And they're not formally just in a kind of clinical setting, you know, what we call this word. And so, we don't vet people. They could have a whole series of things going on, from cancer and cardiovascular, and very serious from some perspectives, and also maybe not so serious to some digestive ailments, but they could actually be part of this whole domino effect of people's wellness and experience of life. So they get to meet with people there, but we do it in a way that they have a fellow student with them, but also we have three mentors, myself, Richard, and Sam. So depending on what it is, one of us might be sitting in, but we have a case review, you know, right afterwards. And then we have this week where they write things up and consider the protocol. So there's a lot of support. It's a way, even if you're not interested in working with people as an herbalist, because you can be an herbalist in many different ways. Mm-hmm. It's a really great experience for people. And it's important on some level to know that, so you can understand how herbs work.
Yeah.
How to
it's like the practical application, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting to see them in action.
And it's the best way we've known how, because people are always scared. I mean, seasoned herbalists are scared meeting with people sometimes. So I've heard stories, including myself, of just this little nervousness, but together it seems we're supporting each other. And this is also when you hear, oh, that thing about, I learned about, you know, this pattern or that in year one. Now it makes sense, because I see it in some, it's not abstract.
Yeah.
So in year one, too, like in learning all these things, we try to bring it home where they try to experience everything as much as possible, even though there is a lot of topics to engage with and learn about. It's really how we live with, and that actually really connects with how we are an herbalist, you know, it's just connecting, you know, with the plants, but also knowing, seeing how it could, if chamomile affect me one way and chamomile affect another in another way, it could be transformative, you know? So it's really a wonderful thing to experience and to do that in the together.
Definitely an experiential learner. So I appreciate like getting to, you know, dive in and like learn how to make medicine, learn how to interact and engage in a clinical setting. Like it really helps to have that kind of hands-on experience, I think.
Yeah. And I totally understand what you mean by supporting someone to be able to hang out their shingle, because that jump from studying herbalism for so long to actually seeing clients that you might not know, like aren't your like best friends or whatever, it can be that seems very difficult. But like starting from a place where you have a mentor and you have other students and this whole system is set up already seems very supportive to getting becoming ungreen or becoming green.
And it's really nice for us too, because it's actually intimate, because we get to, you know, talk about things we didn't get to teach about formally, like, oh yes, that thing I forgot to tell you about, this herb really helps that, you know, and I've had this client do this and but also just spending more one-on-one time, you know, or small group time.
Yeah.
The whole program, you know, we're half online and half in person now. Used to be all in person. And there's many things people are experimenting with today, of course, right? But we found like having the in-person every month for a long 3-day weekend really nice, because we're seeing everybody regularly. And when we do the online, it's just live, you know, it's live and just for a class. And so it all connects together is a way that we also connect personally with each other and become available and can be available in between. So that's.
And that probably allows you, having some classes online, to have a wider net for teachers, because you have other like teachers in the school, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting, because we had a lot of teachers travel from good distances, long distances, to teach with us initially. And it was such a big deal because we're in New York City and housing. But now that COVID really shifted everything, nobody wants, and I think we were all traveling a little bit too much, but perhaps, but it does help that part to be online. And it was interesting because Anne McIntyre comes from the UK, and it was before in March, just before 2020, you know, she was going to come, and it was before things closed down. And she says, I think some things are going to be closing down and I don't think I'm going to be able to come. And we just had a quickly took 1 week off, and we had to quickly learn Zoom because we had but she could still teach. I mean, we're all like playing with Zoom right now, but it's, but we're, it, it can be like, just like a phone call is nice to be in person, but it's a very congenial way to be, to connect, and offers its own ways. And so, yeah, you and I can talk. Exactly. Even though we're both in New York, it's not so easy to get to each other in person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy for that.
I do want to come see the farm though. I do.
Yeah.
I love New Paltz. So.
Yeah. It seems like there also with Zoom now and with online classes, like online classes have in one way become a big business. Like people are making a lot of money by just putting out content that people buy and can consume in that way. And I think that can be very helpful for some people, but it in a certain way, it seems very opposite to the way that you're doing this school with like a, you have like a core group of students who are going through the process. There's a cohort, there's mentors, there's support. And it's like a real commitment too. Like three years is, that's a, you know, that's a serious commitment.
Yeah.
But it also seems like there aren't as many options for serious study of herbalism. Like back in the day, maybe you would apprentice to an herbalist. And then it seems like in your generation and in previous generations, there was a lot more just like going from herb teacher to herb teacher, but there weren't as many like schools available. But yeah, so I'm also interested in your perspective on the landscape of herbal education right now. And like, what are the options? And what do you think is going on, and what's best for, I mean, because there are a lot of different kinds of herbalists, as we were saying.
Yeah.
So it kind of depends on people who wants,
like serious study, maybe.
Yeah. Who wants to be a real practicing herbalist.
Yeah.
What do you suggest?
Well, I think we're in this time of change. You know, we all say it in different ways. It's so strong. And so we're all trying out different things. And there's, when you're trying something, there's an energy around it. You know, and I know a number of people that have felt like they've, I mean, authentically found some community online and learned and done that. But I think, and I'm grateful for the online options.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I mean, even for myself, sometimes I'll find a class that, you know, something I wanted to learn about that's really helpful. So that's, I don't want that to go away.
Yeah.
So within that though, you know, it's also just this whole thing like, oh, we're, it's not like Amazon. It's definitely not like Amazon, but it's like, oh, we're just having this, we're out in the cloud and then we're not connected. We're not able, maybe some people don't have anything, but this not aware of the herbalists around us. And so I think one of the things that's really helpful is if you can, you know, these in-person meetings, like you're having the Plant Cunning conference that will, you know, bring people from maybe further afield, but I bet a lot of local herbalists will get to meet each other, which I think is so important.
Yeah.
And that's one of the goals.
Yeah, yeah. Like I'm so excited about it for that reason and beyond. But within that, it's, you know, there were so many of those conferences. That's what Rosemary Gladstar, she sort of, in many ways, sometimes is called the, you know, grandmother of modern herbalism. But what she did is she brought people together. Like she had different schools. So that was one thing. And we'd go to study different people, but in these conferences, you get to meet people, but you know, hopefully the conferences could be that allows people to meet with each other, right? Not, and connect. You know, they used to be a bit smaller, so they would be, it wouldn't be in this big place. But so being together in these conferences can be a really helpful way in being a part. It's not that you're going to learn to be an herbalist and go by going to classes in a conference, but you can start to connect beyond what you learned in a class, which will be helpful for sure. Always was inspiring to me. So, but connecting to local herbalists, and maybe they might not know everything you want to learn, but I think that that's a really important part. They'll show you their plants. You can start to share your plants. You can medicine, like all these things. It's, I think it could be just going on botany walks. Like a lot of herbalists will give botany walks, or maybe not herbalists, but just people who will teach you the plants. Like I think local people or in your bioregion, people that you can meet and study with and connect with, and even people that might be learning with you together. Like a lot of the students have formed, every year they always form deep relationships and they form groups together where they study together. And I think that's where the great learning is, where they talk to each other about all of that. So I think you could have both and, you know, but it's really hard to learn to meet with people online. Like, yeah. you know, learn to be, you know, a clinical quote unquote herbalist. I have to keep on saying that word by studying online courses, as much as they might cover some of those things. So hopefully you mix them up, can mix them up. And because I know that a lot of people don't have access to things. And so the important part is to just start somewhere. Mm-hmm. And usually unfolds in lots and lots of incredible ways. Because I think the earth wants us to be herbalists. I mean, not everybody has to be an herbalist, like a quote unquote, but just connected with the earth, you know, and if you want to use it as medicine, that's another way to be connected.
Yeah.
And she'll pull you if you are meant to be an herbalist, if you have the deep yearning to do it, or even if you aren't conscious of that, but it's, you know, there, it's there, then in a certain way it unfolds.
Yeah, like you. Yeah. Yeah. As an artist that, you know, followed the path of the plants, they drew you in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if someone wants to do a 3-year program at a certain point, you know, that's, they can do that.
Yeah.
Do you know how many other programs there are in the US that are on the same kind of caliber as Arbor Vitae?
Well, and also there's no one way to study herbalists. So there might be different programs that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Do things differently. It doesn't mean that it's any less, you know, like I really want to say that, like, but maybe not all programs put in as much as we put in the 3 years, like they're just a 1 year or something like that. But so, because it's really, you know, just really want to emphasize, it's about learning the plants and learning about people, and it's what we bring to it, right? Because you can learn everything, and it's like, do we practice this in some way? But and ultimately, you know, the earth and nature is our teacher, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But within that, there are, like, the Vermont School is of Integrative Herbalism. Mm-hmm. They've gone through some transitions themselves and now mostly online. But we sort of considered, they started before us and we sort of looked at what they were doing. We chose on our side to be not active during the summer, not teaching, have like 3 months, 3.5 months off. I love it. I think everybody likes it. Because the summer you're supposed to be expansive and you know, so we do a lot of things inside, outside in the fall and the spring. And you know, even in the winter, of course, because all seasons. But so we do that. But if you're, you know, number of places have things. I know Thomas Easley School and the Colorado School is great. I just call them by their places.
You know what I'm saying.
In North Carolina. But there's so many more than that I'm not familiar with, because I really am this little turtle in this little world. But within that, one of the things I really do hope that can emerge, and we've had some conversations, I remember even at the international just had a little quick conversation with Emily Ruff, because she also has a schools and taking over Sage Mountain, is to have, you know, just we who, you know, sort of run these schools, you know, to talk, you know, and some people come from other schools and other teachers and other people into our second year. And, you know, so nothing ever matches. They learn something that we don't teach, and they don't know something that was covered in year one, but that's just the nature of the game. And we find ways to connect it all.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And it is kind of weird, this period of transition where there's a lot of stuff online. There's a lot of hybrid stuff, because not just too long ago, you would have to go to and live in the area where you were going to school, for instance, mm-hmm. if you were in around New York City, then you had arborvitae. If you were in Colorado, you know. Mm-hmm. But it also is, I think it is super important to connect in person with people, as you were saying, because that's really how, like, yeah, there's a lot learned and a lot gained that is not transferable via the internet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when you have relationships, you can call upon those relationships, you know, if you can support each other.
Yeah.
You know, like you were saying about the continued learning of your students, you form little groups. Like, I definitely experienced that. I was studying with Seven Song, my little herb group that we would do the botany homework together and stuff, and continue to ask each other questions and connect, you know, but yeah.
It's an exciting time, actually. You know, there's more people drawn to this than ever, or at least know, you know, like one of the things I hope through more people know that they can go to an herbalist.
Right.
You know, like, I think it's not the first thing they think. So often we see people that have had everything go wrong.
Yeah. And
not working. So they, well, I'll try an herbalist.
Yeah, totally.
Not that it's, you know, like, but they don't know that they could do that.
And yeah.
I think, you know, as more people start to work with plants and practice with the plants, it will be just more of a thing that we can do as humans.
Definitely more the merrier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does seem like the culture is changing a lot too. I mean, as you were saying, when you were practicing in New York City, a lot of your clients would be from other cultures because in those cultures they recognized that, but in the Western United States industrial culture, it's just, you know, you just go to the doctor, you know, you don't think of herbalists except as a last resort, maybe.
Yeah. And I did see, you know, people, of course, you know, from, you know, white American, New York, or whatever, but, you know, in some sense, we're enculturated to not tell anybody we're going to see an herbalist.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if I went, it's somebody Hispanic or even within in different, you know, subgroups, they would tell everybody they saw me. So I would get to see whole groups of people that way. It was just shared because there was no, it was only by word of mouth.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you're a little embarrassed for seeing an herbalist, then you're not going to tell your friends.
Yeah.
And then they're not going to go see you. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Well, I'm glad that the culture is changing.
Yeah.
And it does seem like the internet has something to do with that too. Like there are so many people like on TikTok, even the foraging, even over the last couple of years, I've seen so many more people get into foraging, getting into wildcrafting, getting into herbalism, mm-hmm. getting into all of these kind of things. And I think that has something to do with it. There's also problems to that, but I think I think we need it now too. And that's why it's happening.
I do too. I think, you know, ultimately, hopefully we'll just learn from the earth when we do that. But yeah, I think it's exciting.
Yeah.
I've already a few times, but because there is this part that is, you know, breaking down and it's sad. And
yeah.
So, but I think within the shell of all of this, these new inklings of ways of being again, and it's not like going back to another form of herbalism that existed 1,000 years ago or not. It's because there's new things emerging and the plants are showing up in different ways. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. who would have thunk that teasels used for lime, for example? You know, the plant, you know, we're sort of connecting to the plants and seeing how we can use them for things that are happening now,
like
COVID and things like that. So we don't want to go back, but to build this. And the other part, that's another part of why I'm committed to running a school, so to speak, because it is a lot of work, is that I'm also interested in local economies.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been, I feel like, it was influenced by Wendell Berry. I thought I discovered him in 1980, but he was already discovered. But within that, he had a huge influence. I mean, and even before that, there was, you know, the Mennonites and other aspects of simple living and local living. When I was, it was just something that matter to me when I was young somehow came in with that. And so herbalism is really is ultimately very local. You know, yeah. Plants are, you know, we're also glad we get plants from other places. We're glad for this connection to each other at distances without having to travel, you know, long, you know, and all of these things, but we want to support our local economies. And because that also is part of the local ecosystem.
Absolutely.
And so having a local herb school, as well as herbalist practicing, like being able to earn a living doing that, but not gouging people to do that, you know, if people, and so, or that's, you know, affordable, hopefully it will become more and more something that could be accessible to people.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting to me. That's worth to work for me.
Mm. And is there anything else that you want to share that you're excited about coming up for you or for Arborvitae or?
Also, where can people find?
Yeah, where can people find you if they want to find more out about Arborvitae and if they want to get in touch?
So for the school, it's where you have a website. I have a website, but I'm not even going to give it because somebody put it up for me and it's very confusing. I haven't accessed it for 15 years.
Okay.
So I will do it, but I'm still in that kind of ilk where I started without a website and don't feel connected to it, though mm-hmm. I think they're great. So our school though has a very nice website and mm-hmm. not that it covers everything, but you can visit it and it's Arborvitae, ArborvitaeNY. Even though we started in New York City, we thought it's Arborvitae NY. We thought we might be upstate when we first started anyway, in which we are.
Cool.
And arborvitaeny.com. And so we also, that's the same for Instagram and other social media. We don't have a lot, but we're developing that more a little bit because I do know that's a way to connect with each other. And I respect that. It's exciting mm-hmm. to have that. And they can connect to me through that. It would just be my name, Claudia at arborvitaeny.com. Or if you don't think about it, just contact the school.
Okay.
And within that, for people who are local, we haven't done it yet. We do plan, we had one little intensive just this past weekend, but we will start to have more classes for the community, maybe, you know, support other students and people graduating, do classes, maybe. And both intensives for people who are already practicing in some way as an herbalist that want to learn about a particular subject in depth and other things that might be introductory. So that's as we settle more into our new land and home, that will emerge as well mm-hmm. as working with the land, of course.
Yeah, so very exciting. Yeah. And it's been wonderful to talk with you, Claudia.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom and stories with us today. It was really fun.
Thank you. Thank you for doing. And I'm just excited to, you know, just talking to you as part of this connection of the herb shed, so to speak, our watershed, our herb shed.
I like that.
That is very alive to me from things that I just felt a long time that we need to be connected. So I'm just grateful for your presence and the way you're doing that and the conference coming up with the Plant Cunning Conference. So I wish you so well.
Thank you so much, Claudia.